Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
We're at the Civic Center in Roswell, New Mexico, and this is the 60th anniversary, and Nick Redfern's here. He wrote a pretty controversial book. How's it being taken?
Well, it's interesting, Jerry, that, you know, I think I kind of came into town expecting to almost be thrown out of town.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that was never the intention of my book, Body Snatchers in the Desert, was never to debunk Roswell as an ET event. What it was actually designed to do was to say to the reader, hey, this is a story I've been told. Is it? Can we verify it? Is it disinformation? Is it true? Or is there some other agenda at work? And so my aim was to put the information out for people to see, purely if the research community could take it further. And, I mean, I've got an interesting reception this weekend where people, you know, have sat and fairly listened to the story, and some have agreed with it, some haven't agreed with it. But I think, for me, the most important thing is that everybody is willing to sit down and discuss the case, which is the way I think it should be done.
Now you've been traveling around quite a lot. You're a hard man to keep track of, so you're on the trail of something here. What's happening these days?
Well, you know, I try and keep busy. I like to write books and travel. You know, I enjoy the fun aspect of you know going out and actually doing an on-site investigation. I think with anything really, whether it's UFOs, cryptozoology, which I also do a lot of, I think the only way to really do an investigation is to get out there, you know, and do it personally. And not too long ago, I went to Puerto Rico doing an investigation into the Chupacabras.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Spent
What's happening down there with those little guys?
Well, that's a really interesting story because, in some respects, on Puerto Rico at least, it seems to have gone a little bit quiet in the last few years, publicly at least. But when I went out there and I was able to speak with farmers, ranchers, police officers, civil defense workers, you actually find that there are still a lot of reports going on. It's just that a lot of people are more reluctant to come forward and actually, you know, have their stories spilled all over
because,
the media.
Yeah, because it has cooled down. They just, I guess the laugh factor or whatever got to them.
Yeah, but what I found interesting was that the reports that were very prevalent in the 90s are still going on. I spoke with a number of ranchers whose animals have been found killed under very weird circumstances, with literally like two puncture wounds and blood removed from the bodies. And the bodies were autopsied, examined by vets, etc. And, you know, it was quite clear that there was something out of the ordinary at work.
When you were down there, did you get some eyewitness descriptions?
Yep. We actually spoke with a lady named Norca, who lived high in the El Yunque rainforest. And she'd actually seen a chupacabras back in 1975, which was years before most of the more recent reports. And she described it as being almost like a monkey-like body with glowing eyes and claws and a pair of bat-like wings. And it was literally stood in the middle of the road. She had to bring her car to a halt because it was just stood there right in front of her. And she was a very, very credible witness.
So it had some sort of wings on it, huh?
Yeah, it looked almost like she described it as like bat-like wings with membranes.
I've had a couple of people tell me stories about this creature and that they've seen, and they talked about it jump 20 or 30 feet. Maybe it's because it can fly.
Yeah, I mean, there are reports. We actually interviewed one guy who'd seen this creature actually lift off from a deep canopy of a tree that was like 30 feet in the air, and this thing was obviously perched or hiding in the tree. He heard a rustling and looked up, and this thing flew out the top of the tree and didn't so much fly, but it almost glided like a hang glider down the hillside to a nearby farm. And interestingly enough, the guy told us that a couple of days later there were some weird animal mutilations at the same farm where it flew over.
And we know about I guess they got the name for goat sucker or something like that.
Yeah, the chupacabras is sort of Latin for goat sucker.
Uh-huh. So they may not only just be vampires, they might actually eat the flesh too?
Well, what we found, we didn't actually find evidence of them eating the animals. What was interesting, though, was that a number of people told us that when the autopsies were carried out, in addition to blood being removed, the liver of the animal was gone as well. The heart, kidneys, everything else was intact, but the liver was gone in each case. Now, What that means, I don't know, but to me...
It means I can't find a Colonel Sanders.
Yeah.
I get a chicken liver
from McDonald's.
But I think the interesting thing for me was that suggests we're not dealing with just a wild animal, because that would just tear...
Whatever.
The fact that it's going for specific things makes it sound that, like these things are intelligent in some capacity. So
do you have drawn any kind of conclusion yet?
Well, you know, I mean, it's interesting that a lot of the people we spoke with had UFO sightings or reports in conjunction.
So we're talking about a connection, just like sometimes with Bigfoot, you hear.
Yeah, exactly. What it was, we'd go to a farm where, for example, there'd been a chupacabras attack, and maybe the same farmer or somebody, a next-door neighbour, had seen weird lights in the sky the night before or the night after. And that probably happened 6 or 7 occasions with the people we spoke to, that we got this correlation between the weird animals or creatures, whatever they are, and UFO activity as well.
So, you got another book coming out anytime soon?
Yeah, I've got one coming out in September, which is called Memoirs of a Monster Hunter.
That's not far from here. It's called what again? Memoirs?
Memoirs of a Monster Hunter. And that's all cryptozoology. It's got the chupacabras things in there, Bigfoot, a few lake monster investigations, anything that's sort of, you know, related to weird animals, mystery creatures. And it's sort of a 5-year... investigation of things that I've looked into in the United States and Puerto Rico.
So basically, you've kind of narrowed in on those two countries.
Yes, the U.S. and Puerto Rico.
What other things do you have in there besides what we've talked about, cryptozoology? You know, do you have the Mothman story?
I haven't actually got the Mothman, but I've got one similar, where back in the 1940s, there was a story of somebody who'd seen a weird creature like the Mothman, like a large man-like creature with glowing eyes and, again, huge bat-like wings. And this was actually very much like the Mothman-type situation when the people told me.
Where did this happen?
This actually occurred in West Texas, not far from Lubbock.
Okay.
It ran about 1943, 1944.
Not a lot of places to hide out there.
Well, the thing. Yeah. This was actually seen in the middle of the road. It was literally, a guy was driving, and this thing was just stood there and just soared into the air. And that's something you get in a lot of the Mothman reports. You know, it just seems to take off vertically like a helicopter almost. And so that's in there. There's a couple of Bigfoot investigations I went on.
What do you make of the Bigfoot thing?
Well, you know, Bigfoot's interesting because a lot of researchers tend to take the approach that it's just, you know, a straightforward ape hiding in the forest. But the more I've looked into it, you find a lot of weird activity and weirdness associated with Bigfoot.
Like what?
Well, you know, some people talk about how the thing literally seems to vanish in the blink of an eye, or seems impervious to bullets. But there have been sightings of UFOs in the same area as Bigfoot activities.
In your investigations, did you hear about anybody actually taking a lot of shots at a Bigfoot?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of these. Where
it seems to me that Bigfoot habitats are out in the middle of, that would be a normal reaction if somebody would see something.
Yeah.
Kill it.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing. And I think if it is a real-life creature, I think it's a shame that only way to find the evidence.
That's the way I feel about deer hunting. If it were a sport, give the deer a gun, too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. At least give them a fighting chance.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, I would prefer it if one was captured, tagged, maybe, you know, take a few hair samples, DNA, and then let it go where it's found, and don't tell people, you know, the exact location.
Well, a Bigfoot story seems like they might be intelligent animals or whatever they are, and they seem to have a family. I mean, I've heard many times that there were two or three together.
Yeah, I don't think it's just like some large, lumbering, stupid, dumb animal. Mm-hmm. You know, not to call animals dumb, but, you know, I think there's more to it than that. And I'm interested in the sort of the stranger aspects of the Bigfoot reports that a lot of researchers don't like to deal with, you know, the fact that people try to shoot it and they're not able to, or sometimes people try to photograph it and the cameras have jammed, things like that. So.
Is there an odor with Bigfoot?
Well, some reports there is, yeah. Uh-huh. Other ones, it's almost, you know, they have the ability to just stealthily watch you and vanish, and almost, you know, like a chameleon sort of thing without even any detection.
I don't guess there's ever been a report of a Bigfoot remains when they pass away.
Well, there are stories. There are people.
But I mean, anybody ever seen the evidence? I don't know.
No, there's never really been, you know, a Bigfoot body or anything like that recovered. The closest, there was a story in the late 60s concerning something became known as the Minnesota Iceman, which was this strange body encased in a block of ice, and nobody's really sure if it was a real thing or not. But there are reports of people who said, you know, they've seen bodies lying in the woods and things like that.
Right. I've always suspected the Minnesota Iceman because of the time it was reported. Yeah. The original movie, The Thing, with James Arness, and in the ice, seems very similar.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there are suspicions about that particular case.
How about that? That whole idea that people think they see things, monsters in the dark, and et cetera, because of, you know, we've been doing this in the media forever.
Well, you know, I think that happens. You know, a film comes out and people pick on it. But if you look back into sort of, for example, excuse me, old newspaper reports from 100, 120 years ago, you get a lot of Bigfoot reports, particularly in the US then. At that time, they didn't call them Bigfoot. They were referred to as wild men of the woods. And, you know, you can go back and look in the newspapers from Washington State from 1850, 1840, and some guy out hunting or prospecting said he saw this weird, large ape in the woods. And this is long before, you know, the modern-day Bigfoot reports.
Sure, and long before modern communication,
yeah, no
so
Hollywood
they,
films
the story wouldn't be around.
No, that's right.
Well, Nick, here in Roswell, you're still sticking by your story?
Well, you know, I mean, I just put the story out to see to see what the reaction was and to see if we could take it any further one way or the other. I mean, I'm totally open-minded as to where the truth lies. You know, how much is disinformation, how much is, you know, the government trying to confuse things even more. I just don't know. But I think the important thing is that we just keep doing research and try and get to the bottom of what really happened.
UFOs, you talked about cryptozoology, and we talked about quite a few things. What other things interest you? I guess I almost want to say anything strange or weird, get Nick involved.
Well, cryptozoology and ufology are most of the two main ones. But I've got a new book out right now called Celebrity Secrets, which is all about the way in which the FBI used to monitor and watch Hollywood stars from the 40s through to pretty much the 70s.
What was that all about, really?
Well, a lot of it was...
They thought they were all members of the Communist Party, supposedly. Yeah, it was the official line.
Well, some of them, it was the communist angle. Some was that they're hanging out with the mafia and the mob, people like Frank Sinatra. Mm-hmm. Others, like Marilyn Monroe, were watched because they're having affairs with the Kennedy brothers, and the FBI was worried that the Kennedys were going to give her, you know, some snippets of secret information. And there are lots of weird reasons as well where the government just heard stories from informants that turned out not to be true, but that didn't stop them from watching the celebrities.
Put your place in the head of an investigator of the FBI, and you have carte blanche to investigate people. Wouldn't you rather wiretap Frank Sinatra than Joe Blow down the street?
Yeah, he's probably a lot more interesting. A lot more interesting conversations.
So, you know, it always makes me suspicious of these investigations they do because hey, they're all human beings, too.
Yeah, that's right. They just want to know what's going on at somebody's party.
So you're a paparazzi. Oh, you're an FBI man. Okay.
There's not much difference.
Yeah. So in this book, when you wrote this about the celebrities, who were some of the other people investigating?
Well, as I said, there's the usual ones like Marilyn Monroe, Frank Sinatra. Also Abbott and Costello. There's a big file on Abbott and Costello. Yeah.
Now, what did they think he was up to?
Well, it was weird that somebody contacted the FBI during the Second World War and said that they'd been listening to Abbott and Costello's radio show, and they thought that they were putting code words in there to send messages to Germany. And there's nothing to it. It was just the person who had reported it was obviously a little bit deranged.
Well, it's nice to see that Uncle Sam and his friends have not changed their modus operandi. Somebody calls up and reports some off-the-wall thing. They spend thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
and
but
hurt
John
people.
Wayne, he was a subject of a file. A lot of rock stars, Jimi Hendrix and people like that.
Well,
also,
I can understand the rock stars. John Wayne, of course, Miriam Morrison, he always acted like he's Mr. Patriot.
Yeah, well, he actually had a good relationship with the FBI. They got him involved in making narrations for TV documentaries, and he had a good relation. He was the one person who wasn't sort of in the FBI's bad books. But lots of other celebrities, for example, John Denver, he was the subject of a file, John Lennon, Sonny Bono, all sorts of people. So.
Okay, so what books do we have the book here about Roswell you wrote,
yeah.
And we have one coming out in September, and then we have the one here. We need to plug the books and how they can find them.
Okay, well, right now, the most recent book I've got is Celebrity Secrets, and the most recent UFO book is On the Trail of the Saucer Spies, which came out last year, which is how the government spies on the UFO research community.
I imagine while you were doing the Celebrity Secrets, or maybe the UFO investigation, they kind of dovetailed, didn't
they? They're kind of similar, you know, about government spies watching people in the public world. And then, as I said, in September, I've got Memoirs of a Monster Hunter, which is all about Bigfoot and Lake Monster investigations.
So. You wrote a book about the UFO secrets and people. Did the government really investigate UFOs that pretty thoroughly? I mean, the people were talking about it?
Oh, yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I used the Freedom of Information Act to get hold of various files on people like George Adamski and George Van Tassel, two of the early contactees.
Yeah, back at the Giant Rock.
Yeah, well, George Van Tassel's FBI file is 300 pages long, and it's just literally a case of FBI agents going out and sitting in the audiences at conferences and writing notes about what he was talking about, then preparing reports. And I always say to people, you know, if there's like a 300-page file on George Van Tassel, government agencies don't put files like that together for no reason. That suggests to me there's a genuine puzzle to be resolved. And the fact that they're putting reports together on people like Adamski, a lot of the early people in the subject, Leonard Stringfield, I got hold of his FBI file, Gray Barker, Albert Bender, some of the early Men in Black researchers, and it was pretty much the case that there were more people being watched than weren't being watched in the UFO subjects.
Well, my theory, maybe we've got about 30 seconds here, but my theory about it is that these investigations go on because the government, at least sections of the government, they don't know any more than we do.
Well, I think the government as a collective body has a lot more information than we do.
Yeah,
radar reports, pilot reports.
But
whether they actually have an answer as to the motivation behind why these creatures or beings are here, I think they actually may have theories and ideas and more information, but I'm not sure they've got ultimate proof. So I think that's possibly why they do monitor the UFO community to see if we're actually, you know, breaking new ground that would help them answer some of the problems as well.
Thank you very much, Nick Redfern, for coming by here at the Civic Center in Roswell, New Mexico. I'm Jerry Pippin. We'll be back in a moment. The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast walkers, UFO and alien disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime, anywhere. Fast Walkers now available on DVD for only $19.95 at shopjerrypippin.com. We are in Roswell at the Civic Center, and this is the 60th anniversary, and our next guest is Adam Gilrightly.
Very good. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's always good to have you here. And last year, I think he showed me a book or something. What was it you were talking to me about last year?
Well, I'm not sure. I saw you at Retro UFO.
Yeah, right.
And no specific book, but I'm basically given the same lecture here that I gave
right.
there, which
right.
is...
And that was out in Landers, California.
Beautiful Landers, California.
Yeah, right. There's something about the desert. tell me a little bit about that lecture and what the book's about.
The lecture itself is called Were the Early Contactees Ritual Magicians, which presents the theory that the early UFO contactees, you know, going back to the 50s, George Adamski and all those fellows, as well as current day abductees to a certain extent, have used magic rituals to contact UFOs. It's kind of a wild theory to some people, but what I present is basically that in some cases, it's not always witting ritual magic. It might be unwitting in a lot of cases. Witnesses plant a certain seed. And this all came from an experience I had in the late 1970s during my wayward youth.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that experience. We did before, but I want to flesh it out a little bit. Tell me a little bit about that, what happened to you.
Once again, it was my wayward youth, and
he has to qualify this.
Yeah.
That's a disclaimer. He's a responsible citizen now.
That's right. With a friend of mine and myself, went on a psychedelic experience. This was in Central California, pretty populated city. Went out and...
Well, we know it was a natural deal with mushrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It was legal back then.
Okay.
and so before we started witnessing these things, whatever they were, we joked to each other, what if we saw UFOs right now? Nobody'd ever believe us because the state we're in. We started laughing somewhat uncontrollably. And anyway, walking along a levee ditch bank, shortly 15 minutes or so later, we started seeing a number of UFOs, your classic cigar-shaped UFOs, saucer-shaped UFOs, even these wild things that were multicolored with propellers, almost cartoonish looking. The experience seemed like these things were interacting with us, and what was unusual or unique, if we were observing hallucinations, we were both seeing the same things.
So it wasn't an individual thing, so you think it was real?
Well, I think real to the extent that we... What is real? But we tapped into something that kind of falls in line with a theory researcher John Keel has about the super spectrum, where if you reach a certain state of mind, either through ritualistic use of drugs or a trance state through meditating, it's the same thing as psychics or channelers. You can tap into the super spectrum and look into other dimensions or ethers, as ritual magicians call them. So that's kind of the basis of the theory.
And so basically, you think UFOs are probably interdimensional or from some other place and not necessarily out in the galaxy somewhere.
Yes, I don't think there's necessarily one answer, but the theory that makes the most sense to me is that they are interdimensional, and we play a part in the creating the experience. There's a lot to do here with our own perceptions.
Well, we've had many people come on the air and say we wanted to see a UFO and we saw one. You just talked about that earlier in the interview,
right? Exactly.
So that maybe you may have something there.
And what I also get into is you're looking at different achieving trance states, ritualistic use of drugs and these type of things. Aleister Crowley, who's a pretty notorious character, was messing around with these things and something he called Enochian calls, based on some magic rituals that Elizabethan magician John Dee did back in the 17th century, where they called up these energies, and it was around the 1904 or so that Crowley started messing around with these things and came in contact with this interdimensional being by the name of Lom. And a lot of people have looked at the sketches that Crowley did. He did sketches of all his magic rituals, and he drew this being who looks remarkably similar to the alien gray on the cover of Whitley Strieber's Communion. So this started me on this path of researching these connections, and it led into the early contactees from the 50s, George Hunt Williamson, these guys who were messing around with these Enochian calls and trance channeling, and it seemed to be that there was more going on here with meditative states, trance states, and these type of things in the experience, and it had to do with actual nut and bolt crafts that people could grab a hold of.
So when we talk about all of this, then is this some sort of a figment of our imagination, in your opinion, or is it real and just a different reality? How would you explain it?
I would see it as a different reality, you know, and I'm not the first one to dip my toes in these arcane areas. John Keel, for one, talked, and Jacques Vallée in his book Passport Magonia, about talking about an experience that has gone on for a long time, and it's shaped by our perceptions of today. With the technological age, perhaps we frame these things and see them as creatures from another planet who came here on spaceship. You go back to the Celtic lore and fairy tales, they were perceived in a different manner, but a lot of times they still were little green men and these type of things.
So when you talk about all of this, Adam, and you come to these conferences, what is it you're trying to get across to people, or what in a nutshell, what would you say your mission is?
To basically look at the phenomena itself and see how we are players in it and how our perceptions seem to shape the whole thing is really, in a nutshell, if people will step back and kind of look at it like that. And I'm not discounting the real possibility of ETs visiting our planets and these type of things, but seeing it from another perspective or looking at
have you had areas. Other experiences since you've become a responsible adult?
A lot of the experiences happened during that period when I was messing around, not only psychedelics, but I did some reading on astral projection, and all of a sudden I steeped myself in all these books looking into these things. And all of a sudden, I started astral projecting, and it was very similar to an ET encounter, and it scared the hell out of me.
Oh, really? Tell me a little bit about you. I mean, you sat down, and you were in a corner and doing yoga or something?
Well, not exactly. I read the books about astral projection, the phenomena, and the sensations and how you experience it, and I think I just planted, once again, these seeds in my mind. It was like the UFO encounters. And so I went to bed one night and woke up in the position, the exact position. It was my room. Nothing was strange or changed like in a dream, but I started levitating. That was one of the first experiences. Once again, you know, in dreams.
I've never levitated. How does that feel? Is it a dream or real?
Well, it's hard to say. It seems so very, very real. Once again, during this astral projection states, I never left my room. The room never changed. It was never strange. It was not, you know, like in a lot of dreams, if you're in a room, it's a combination of different places you've been, but it was exactly my own room there. And so I had a lot of the experience where I was levitating up and floating around the ceiling, and it matched astral projection experiences I read about. Then one of the last ones was a kind of spooky experience where these...
Oh, I love spooky experiences.
Well,
so tell
me a little bit about it. They were these demonic-type entities making strange whispering and noises in my ears.
When you say they were demonic-type, they look like little devils or what? Vicious monsters?
I say demonic because that's basically how I framed it at that period. They scared the hell out of me, and I equated it to, you know, evil influences. So that as well was similar, that experience, to, you know, what people experience with ET encounters.
We are running a little late here. We have a press conference coming up, and we have one more guest. So, Adam, we're going to have to shut it off now. Let's give him a big hand, everybody.
Thanks, Gary.
We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Farah Yurtuzer. Maybe you have questions about love, your job, your health, money and more. With my psychic gifts In my tarot readings, we can reveal the solutions to your deepest mysteries. Please visit me through Jerry Pippin Radio and let's find the answers together.
Click on Pharaoh's banner for the answers to the most personal questions.